first guest in today's lead, Robin Porteous, is an activist and writer for The Mail and Guardian, who would like to point out some what she calls deceptively simple interventions that might be able to help us. Robin, welcome to Breakfast with Rufilo. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much. It's lovely to chat to you after chatting to you on Twitter for ages. Nice to chat to you in person.
Quite right. Robin, let's focus a bit on this article that you wrote for The Mail and Guardian. I think it points to these vicious stats that we see that are extended long beyond the October to December 2020 South African statistics. You even look into the pervasiveness, of course, of rape culture or rape statistics and the lack of coverage across SADC.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, those recent statistics that you've already cited, saying that there were 12,200 women raped just in 3 months, which is a 5% increase in terms of sexual offences. But it's not something that's just present. It's not something that's recent. It's something that's been going on for decades. So in 2015, Genderlinx looked at 27,000 news items in South African development countries and found that gender-based violence only accounted for 1% of the topics covered. So it's not even the case that, you know, the crimes that are happening are necessarily getting the coverage that they're owed in order for us to understand the full scope of the picture. But even if they were being covered, you know, certain schools of thought are that only 1 in 4 rapes are ever reported. So realistically, you've got a double-pronged issue where you don't actually know the full scope of the issue. So how can you come up with a solution or an intervention that actually has meaningful change?
And I suppose hurried change. I mean, I think the ultimate meaningful final changes in the mindset of a society and the psyche, but that doesn't help the 135 women every morning that wake up, try to get to work, as I mentioned a little earlier on, wake up next to their abuser or rapist as well. Let's talk a little bit about the interventions that you've put forward, because you also didn't want to get caught up in you know, the bashing of inappropriate talk from our leadership. You lead with just highlighting what a good intervention is not. And I think often our bloodlust leads, and you rightly point out, leads us to want the swift action of the mob justice. Tell us why that doesn't work.
So, you know, I've been watching a lot of the rhetoric that takes place, not only on social media, but when I attend protests against gender-based violence. And naturally, because it is such a pervasive issue, it is so infused with emotion. It's so infused with the tendency to kind of want a swift and vicious solution. But things like the death penalty are not solutions. There's studies and there's research the world over that indicates that it does not actually deter crime. And it also, you know, as opposed to what we actually need, it ends up decreasing conviction. When, you know, 2017, we saw a conviction rate for rape of just 8.6%. A decrease on that would be absolutely devastating. You know, it would completely compromise the small piece of justice that we're getting.
And it decreases the conviction because of the fear of an incorrect...
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And of course, as you rightly say, a criminal justice system that's flawed, it doesn't matter what the sentencing is if we can't even get to...
Completely.
So let's talk a little bit about the criminal justice system at the outset. One of the other things that you highlight is training in police stations, which is one of the things that President Ramaphosa put forward as what would be his interventions, amongst many of interventions that he mentions at any time. One of the stats that came out last week, I think it was that 76% of stations don't even have rape kits.
Yeah, which is devastating. And it also, you know, if you take into account in October, the budget cut of 1.2 billion rand from the police budget, it, you know, it does lead one to have very little confidence in that kind of statistic changing. But then you've also got Becky Tele yesterday saying that they've just been given 55 BMWs that should be used in the fight against gender-based violence. And I, for one, would like to understand just how he envisions that happening.
I mean, again, don't want to get caught up in calling out the obvious flaws here. But you indicated a particular correct response, a Khayelitsha lighting project that suggested to you a pretty simple intervention that we might be able to see in communities.
Yes. Yeah, so I first read about this in a book by Nahama Brody called Femicide in South Africa, which should absolutely be required reading for every South African. And basically, the Khayelitsha Commission of Inquiry in 2014 did an extensive look into what was happening and certain things that could change what the horrible statistics and the horrible crimes that were taking place there. And they found that ineffective and inadequate lighting actually contributed to crime while simultaneously making policing more challenging. So they came up with a lighting plan. It's incredibly simple. It's, you know, the concept is that if there is a degree of lighting that, and the city of Cape Town has actually said that they acknowledge that lighting in Khayelitsha and other areas don't even meet the national standard. So they came up with a plan and they had a budget. But looking back now, 6 years later, less than half the amount needed has been allocated to this plan. And what has been allocated is not just for Khayelitsha, it's for areas from Mitchell's Plain all the way to Gordon's Bay.
All right. So I know we've spoken in the past to safety and security, I think, members of our MACO, and it seems as though this is something that has been given light to, but even though it may not be perfect, just the style of lighting, never mind the amount of lighting, the very high concentration camp kind of lighting doesn't seem to make sense as opposed to street lights that are that allow people, even in very close quarters, to be visible.
Has this
study that you were looking at also cut into that and how it might pervade across the city?
Robin,
there's a combination of money, will, and common sense that needs to be put into place here. I suppose this week, being the budget, money is the first thing. Let's talk about will. I mean, is our SAPS currently the appropriate place to put this in place? Is the President's Gender-Based Violence Fund, you know, as sexy as that might sound in finance circles, the right place? Or is it this nebulous sort of naughty corner for ministers that's called the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities?
The Department for Women and Children and People with Disabilities, they, as far as I'm aware, they don't actually have any power in terms of implementing interventions. You know, they oversee as a sort of authority and a paying lip service to women and women's issues being addressed. But you don't actually feel that they are the sort of establishment that is required to tackle an issue of this proportion. So, you know, again, as I said in the article that I wrote, we don't need this to be talked about just at certain times when the elections are looming or a certain political player wants to be seen as taking a hard stance than their competitors. That's not what this is about. This is every single day women and children are losing their lives, and it should be top of mind in the same way that we've been looking at the COVID stats and their impact on our society. But by the same token, you know, if we had a gender-based violence dashboard that was counting the numbers of what happened, that would also lend itself to desensitizing us, because those numbers lose the kind of, they lose the reality that is a person. Every single number is a person. It's a woman with a family and a life.
Robin Porteous, thank you so much for your perspective. Activist and writer for The Mail and Guardian. Have your say, 0725671566.